Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Harry Gramling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
All right, here's the deal with this show. We're going to run through the Sunday games. We're going to run through the Saturday games. And we're really excited about all of it because, correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, but I think we saw three genuinely unprecedented things in this weekend's games.
This was the most batshit weekend of NFL football that I can remember in my life. And I was not prepared for it in any way, shape, or form. I thought this was going to be a very sleepy end of season kind of week where everybody's a little hurt and everybody's a little tired and everybody just decided to collectively lose their minds, Gary. And it was great. It was, you know what it was? It was the end of the sleepover when you're a little kid and everybody starts to go to bed, but then there's one kid that's just cracked out on Swedish fish and he just starts bouncing off the walls and he just lights the whole place back up again. And then it's 3 a.m. and you're starting to dunk on the Fisher Price hoop and everybody's listening to Sugar Ray and you're just having a good time. That's what this weekend was.
I was down with that until Sugar Ray.
Well, I'm trying to think, sure. what would have been the song of your little kid sleepovers? Like
I don't think
something
really...
by Bush.
Yeah, I don't think we really played music at sleepovers.
You didn't listen to music?
Something by Bush. No. I don't know. You're like, you know what it was? It was me and my best friend, we used to always do George Harrison, Got My Mind Set on You, because it also had the funny video to it. And if you had that on the VCR,
fair.
Because again, this was the 1930s, you could have a really good slumber party.
I like that song. It's a good song.
So, we're going to get to that Saturday game. I don't want to spoil it, but the Colts were winning 33-0, and then something happened against the Vikings. We're going to get to what I think was, you know, sort of unprecedented number two here. A single play that I thought was the coolest thing I think I've ever seen on a football field. And we're starting it with... the worst play you've ever seen, the worst way to end a game if you're the Patriots, the funniest way to end a game if you're the Raiders?
I don't know. I've thought about it a lot. I've been thinking about it since I've seen the play, and it's one of those moments where in life where you think, my entire existence is going to go down one of two paths after I make this decision. And you know it. You know it right when it happens. And Jacoby Myers said it after the game. He said, I was going to be the hero. I was going to try to be the hero. And I mean, at first, when you see it, right, it's just something that you point at and you laugh at and you say, ha ha, what a stupid thing. Bill Belichick is the master of football. Yeah, right. Can't even tell your guy to run out of bounds. But then you start thinking about it, and it's so much bigger than that. This is a guy saying, I'm Michael Jordan. I'm jumping from the free throw line. I might dunk the ball, or I might fall a foot short of the rim and crash into the photographers. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't understand it. It certainly wasn't sanctioned based on the tone of all the post. I watched all the post game from this,
mm-hmm.
but, God, was it beautiful. And I give Jacoby Meyer so much credit for trying it. That took emotional fortitude that I do not possess. I'll say that.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I necessarily give him credit. Jacoby Meyers is a good player. This was like just an all-timer, though. I was trying to kind of come up with a take, and it's like, okay, the Patriots pride themselves in, like, you know, finding that little 1% in every game, that little efficiency that no one else thinks of that they can go and get. And it's like, I don't know, are they such a mess offensively that they've had to kind of get away from drilling those lessons, and now it's just like, guys, we just have to go over the 29 different screen calls we're going to have in this game, and that's how we're going to do things. But there's just, and again, you don't tell someone not to do that. You just assume they're not going to do it. I mean, they're just, it's like, don't try and eat the football during the play. Like, it's not within the realm of possibility. So, the thing I'll say in Jacoby Meyers' defense, so there's like a muscle memory thing at work in here. He's running down the field. The play starts with Ramondre Stevenson on a draw play to try and I don't know. Maybe you hope you get a face mask at the end of the play, then you can go kick a field goal or something. But the clock is being run out, and then Stevenson throws a really haphazard lateral. Like, no one's going to talk about the first one because it was not the disastrous outcome, but I keep on thinking back, when I watch these close Raiders games, I keep on thinking back to that game they lost to the Cardinals early on in the year, where it was the Kyler Murray sort of running in circles that tied the game, and then the game ended with Hunter Renfrow fumbling a ball with the Raiders in field goal position, and you know, a Cardinals guy scoops it up and runs it back 70 yards for a touchdown. That was kind of what this might have been had that lateral not been collected by Jacoby Meyers. And then, you know, it's like, oh, okay, we're lateraling. We're doing that now. I guess I better find someone else to lateral to. And Chandler Jones is on the ground. He's a big guy. I don't think Jacoby Meyers necessarily missed him. He had gone down on the play.
And he also got hit as he threw.
Yes. Yeah. And then Chandler Jones stands up and you know, I'm sure you all saw the rest at this point, but the biggest problem is there's no reward for whatever's going to happen. Like, essentially what you're going to end up with is Mac Jones with the ball 20 yards further back, and now what's he going to do with it? Because there's no more forward pass. I mean, is he going to escape and land? Like, there was just... There was no reward. There was only risk. And then you just needed Mac Jones to haul down 270-pound Chandler Jones.
You make a good point, though. So it's like, did you ever see the Netflix documentary about Woodstock 99?
No, but I went to Woodstock 99, so I love...
What?
Yeah.
To see Bush?
I don't think they played there.
Yes, they did. They played after Korn. That was like a seminal moment in the documentary because Korn was on the first night and they riled the whole crowd up, and then Gavin, whatever his name is, had to come on and they sent them on to calm everybody down before bed the first night because the place was like, Korn tore the roof off the place.
Oh, man.
Do you remember this?
I remember seeing Rage Against the Machine. I remember seeing Seven Dust on a smaller stage. And I remember just sort of wandering around being really thirsty and hot and uncomfortable for 3 days.
You would come away from this just talking about Seven Dust. That was Anyway.
They played a good set. It's an underrated band.
So there was the end with the candles, right? The end of Woodstock 99, they had the candles. And so Red Hot Chili Peppers play Fire. There was supposed to be a vigil. And so one guy takes the candle and starts lighting the infrastructure on fire. And then so somebody sees it, and then another person starts doing it, and then another person starts doing it. Sometimes there's just this thing in our brains that instinctively starts doing what the other people are doing. And so I think you make a really good point in that Ramondre dumps the ball off to Jacoby Myers, and he's sitting there probably just like, did I miss something in the huddle? Are we, I guess we're lateraling. I guess this is what we're doing. And because if you, like, just imagine how hard it would be in your mind to think like, no, I'm not doing this, and then just run out of bounds, right? Because somebody has given you the lateral. Someone said like, tag, you're it. You're playing tag now. You're not just being like, no, I don't want to do this. So I think you make a really good point.
Ramondre Stevenson started the fire. Like, you're just kind of thinking like, boy, Ramondre must have been running and locked eyes with Belichick, and Belichick just sort of whispered, lateral, do it. And that's how it all started. The only play I can really compare it to, and it's obviously, it wasn't nearly as disastrous. It was similar in the kind of like, oh my goodness, like his mind just went to a different place and went on autopilot and just forgot about the situation. There was a, I want to say it was 2016 Washington Eagles game on Saturday night, end of the first half, Washington's driving, they get it down like inside the 10, they have no timeouts, it's like running under 10 seconds, Kirk Cousins goes up to the line to spike the ball, but instead takes the snap and kneels down and runs out the clock, and there was a frantic, like, after he kneeled down that he realized what he did and then, like, tried to run, and it was like, oh boy, like, his brain just forgot what to do there. It just, some sort of like muscle memory took over, and that's what happened. And that's kind of what happened here. I don't know what else there is to say about it.
I give so I'm getting kind of roasted on this for on Twitter, but I don't really care because I'm right about everything. But I watched all the post game, and everyone online was saying that any team would have done this, and I don't think so. Belichick certainly didn't do it, but Devin McCourty, there was like four or five guys that were up at the podium that just completely and without hesitation defended Jacoby Myers and just said like, yeah, no, like that's what we should have done. Like, he made the right decision. This wasn't his fault. Mac Jones was like, the game was on me because I didn't tackle Chandler Jones, which is like, I don't know. I think that's a pretty neat thing. And everyone was like, no, I mean, that's just what you do after the game. I'm sorry. If Gary, if you and I were in the flag football championships together and you just for no reason backwards lateraled the ball and we lost, I'd be like, F that guy. Like, yes, it's his fault. Like, we work really hard and that was a really stupid thing, but yeah. Nobody did that. And I give them a lot of credit for that.
We actually won our flag football championship with a 2-point conversion lateral play. That was a total scramble.
Did and you really?
Yep. And we all went home and listened to Seven Dust.
Wow. Good for you. I still... The first part's true. Can we do a whole podcast about what you remember from Woodstock 99 one day?
Yeah, it would be so weak, though. It's funny, I had this conversation... Gabriel Baumgartner, who used to be our wonderful MLB editor at SI, we had this conversation at a holiday party once. So this is like the fourth year anniversary of this... of the last time I talked about Woodstock 99, I don't have a whole lot. I remember just kind of feeling miserable, and you know, you couldn't poop anywhere because all the porta potties were broken, so you just didn't do BM for 3 days. Huh. And I was with my dear brother and some of his friends, and one of his friends had us very well prepared, like, stocked up on water, stuff like that. So it wasn't too bad for us. And somebody stepped on a ketchup packet, and it, like, exploded and got onto my arm. And I hate ketchup, and that just sort of ruined the whole thing for me. Everything else went swimmingly until that ketchup packet.
Well, all right.
That's it. That's the podcast. If we can stretch that out into 45 minutes, let's do it.
Cowboys Jaguars.
All right, thanks as always to Jimmy Traina of the SI Media Podcast for putting us on the Jimmy Train. Cowboys and Jaguars, just two of my absolute favorites here. This should be a Super Bowl preview. Maybe it will be next year, or maybe it will be this year, because now all of a sudden the Jaguars are right back in this thing.
Oh, that was so cool. That was a great finish, and mm-hmm. it was what I love about the Jaguars this year is that they're going to be a team that if they fall into the playoffs, they could lose the first they could lose their first game by 40 points, or they could make it to the conference championship game just by nature of being very young and very athletic and on any given day wildly capable of doing anything. I mean, this team lost the ball with a minute 30 to go, down three, somehow got it back. The throw that Trevor Lawrence made to set them up for the game-tying field goal was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was one of 30 unbelievable throws that he made during this game. And then to get the pick six off of Dak for the game-winning touchdown. I mean, the whole thing was they're playing really spirited football right now.
Yeah, Lawrence had a couple of throws that were, and I don't want to overuse it, but they're Mahomesian. The body contortion, the platform he is delivering it from, you see it and it's like, wow, that's him and Mahomes. Those are like the two guys who can make those throws. Obviously, like Herbert and Allen are capable of doing incredible things too. They're just, they're more power guys as opposed to kind of, again, it's like biomechanically that should not be possible. The thing that I will say for the Cowboys in this is, let me back it up for a second, because the other thing I liked about this week, besides the absolute insanity, was this was kind of a reminder, because it's the time of year where we start schedule watching, and you start saying, like, oh, okay, so, well, they're going to beat this team, and they'll lose to this team, and they'll beat this team, and they're like, this is how it's going to go. The teams in this league, yes, there are teams that are better than others, but if you get into a game where you have tipped interceptions, missed field goals, non-quarterback fumbles, stuff like that, you might lose. Everyone in the NFL is pretty good. Like, the Cowboys are really good, too. They had a couple of sort of tough break interceptions in this one, and that's how they end up losing this. But, I don't know, these are both just really good teams.
They're two really good teams. I love the fact that the Jaguars are peaking, and I still don't feel like they're using all of their best pieces in a maximized way. Like, schematically, I think defensively they're still kind of a mess, to be honest with you, especially with the way that they're setting up their pass rush and they're using Trayvon Walker. There's a chance that they tweak some stuff and they allow him to be more of a versatile player. Maybe he gets a firmer grasp on the play, whatever it is, by the beginning of January, and we end up seeing something completely different than what we're looking at right now. Something really hard to defend, you know?
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I know a lot of people keep on looking at the Jaguars roster and kind of being like, oh, well, you know, let's mock draft, let's get him a receiver, get him a true number one type of guy. I don't know if they need it. I think this might be one of those teams. I mean, we'll talk about it this offseason because we're going to have sort of a postmortem on last offseason and the teams that invested in receivers and the teams that did not. The Chiefs are one of the teams that did not, and they are rolling along just fine. I think the Jaguars might end up being one of those teams where you can put together sort of a B-minus supporting cast for Trevor Lawrence, just like you can put together a B-minus supporting cast for Patrick Mahomes, and you can still go out and win a lot of games and score a lot of points because your quarterback is that good.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you called it, Gary. I mean, I don't know how many people knew that Trevor Lawrence was going to be excellent. You did.
Hang on. All right, finish your thought.
No. I'm teasing you. You correctly predicted the timing of his emergence as a borderline Pro Bowl caliber player.
Yes.
I think you're dead on. You were dead on about that. And we are getting to the point now where I think he is it's a cross between and I'm not saying he's as good as these guys yet, so don't jump on me, but it is part Mahomesian and it is part Herbertian. And it's this kind of really pleasant middle ground, but it's still very raw, and it doesn't quite have the supporting cast yet, but boy, it's there. I mean, the talent, the confidence, the arm skills, it's for real.
I think when we talk about this in 2 months, because I'm going to give you the silent treatment over your mockery of my Trevor Lawrence take. But when we talk about this in 2 months, I think we're going to be talking about the big five among the young quarterbacks. It's going to be the, you know, Mahomes, Allen, Herbert, Burrow, and Lawrence, in whatever order you want to put them in. But yeah, what's going on here is special. And again, there were a lot of people concerned, rightly, after last season. We kind of know what was at the root of all their issues, but his problems this year were red zone turnovers, very small sample size, and losing fumbles. Daniel Jones doesn't lose fumbles nearly as much anymore. These are all incredibly correctable things. He's had one bad game this year, the Denver game. Yep. And he lost a bunch of fumbles in the rain in Philadelphia. He's got to lose fewer fumbles, and that's it. And then they're fine.
Yeah. Do you agree with my take that Jacksonville could be this weird combustible cosmic force in the playoffs that shakes it up if they get in?
There is no reason, if they get in, there is no reason they can't go on a Bengals run. I don't want to do the Bengals comparison because it's not exactly the same. I think they can score with anyone. I think the Jaguars can basically go out and score with anyone. The Bengals were fueled very much apart by the Lou Anarumo defense and some of the stuff they schemed up and just a good group of players on that side of the ball. The Jaguars are not nearly there defensively, but they are capable of just going punch for punch with anyone. I mean, it's such a cliche to identify anyone as like the team you don't want to see in the playoffs, but I think a lot of teams would much rather see the Tennessee Titans in January than Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars.
Titans, Chargers.
Speaking of those Tennessee Titans, I want to start this game with this moment because this is, I guess, in our show notes, this would be unprecedented moment number two. And I think folks like us, regular folks, hardworking folks, middle class folks, we like when we see things that are logical. We see things that our brains could have like grasped and been like, oh yeah, I could have come up with that idea and maybe executed it if I had the physical gifts that an NFL player has. But there was an interception at the end of the first half in this game. Chargers, no timeouts. 8 seconds left. They're in field goal range, but they want to chuck it up to Mike Williams. Totally understandable. You're going to trust Justin Herbert to basically chuck it in Mike Williams' direction. Maybe you get a touchdown. If not, it's going to fly out of bounds, and that's it. So he throws it high toward the sideline in the end zone for Mike Williams. It's a little too high. Williams kind of loses his footing, and it looks like that's it. It's just going to fly out of bounds. There's no one else, 6'5" in the Titans secondary. Roger McCreary, the rookie, comes over, and this was like a basketball save. And it was so cool because it's like, oh yeah, why don't people do this? He took off inbounds, caught the ball, and basically threw it, instead of landing out of bounds, which he would have, threw it back inbounds, and then his teammate, Joshua Kalu, ends up catching it, drags the feet, and they get an interception out of it. And it was just... It was beautiful in its simplicity and its heads-up-ishness.
It was, you're right, it was, I don't know how to put it. It was delightfully sensible, but extraordinarily athletic. And again, you go back to the Jacoby Myers thing, right? And how many of these situations have happened in practice before? How many times could you have even discussed this with one of your fellow teammates? Like, when does this make sense? When does this log into your brain? And we really are dealing with, going back to the Patriots thing, we sit here on Twitter, on podcasts, and we make fun of all these guys, DJ Moore, going back to that too, when he took his helmet off. But like, we are in a golden age of just like human performance. And that is another just incredible example of that. And I think it probably defines and underlines the frustration between athlete and lay person, because it's just like, do you have any idea how cool that is? And like I know back in Gladiator times, you were allowed to stand there and yell, "Are you not entertained?" And people would, you know, people would be like, "Okay, you're right. That was cool." But we don't get to do that anymore, and we should. That was a very special thing.
As for the rest of this game, so Ryan Tannehill ends up tweaking, I believe, his ankle in this one, and he left for a little while. Malik Willis came in. Willis actually looked a lot like. It looked a lot like when Trey Lance made that start in Arizona last year, where he was just kind of moving around frantically with no rhyme or reason, and it was just a mess. You know, you can do that if you are in a college game and you are sort of athletically superior to everyone out there, but you're not in the NFL, and so it just wasn't working out. So Ryan Tannehill ends up going back out and basically just, you know, with subpar mobility, not at 100%, went out and tried to operate this offense, and it just didn't work. It just became a much more one-dimensional run game, and the game ended up being a slog, because on the other side of the ball, you know, some people might have said, okay, Chargers are going to have some protection issues, but maybe we put Justin Herbert on the move, and therefore we attack the Titans' weakness in their secondary and do some downfield throws. But no, not in this holiday season. The Chargers sort of, you know, ramped it back and ran their usual four stick routes on every snap. And that's how you end up in a 14-7 game late against a team that you should probably beat once their quarterback is limping around. But, yeah, Chargers pulled it out.
It was it's weird, right? It's like when you operate in kind of a pedestrian offense like mm-hmm. he is, it's almost like the air raid principle, right, where you can kind of have a mastery of it over time, and then that leads to more spectacular things. The throw that he made to Mike Williams, I believe it was, on the sideline that set up the game-winning field goal was, again, it was spectacular. And I know that we're a little bit I don't know what you want to call it, overexpressive with our language on today's mm-hmm. show, even though I've tried to become the language reining in police. But
yeah,
some of the stuff that these guys are doing is just amazing. And he's not getting any help schematically at all. And it's starting to get frustrating, where you could imagine Justin Herbert and like Mike McDaniel's offense, and just they would be scoring 80 points a game. If yeah. Justin Herbert was the quarterback of the Dolphins, they would be scoring 50 points a game. I think I could say, or they would have scored at least 50 points three times this year. How about that?
I think 50 points a game is probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe not that Bills game when the Bills just, the defense couldn't get the Bills off the field. But yeah, it's like it got to the end, you know, Titans came in, they tied it. I thought it was a very interesting sort of situation here for the Titans where, you know, Mike Vrabel pulls it within one with the late touchdown. Do you go for two or do you kick the extra point? And I think James Lofton was doing this game and he made the point, you know, you might go for two here, but a tie in the standings is pretty much just as good as a win for the Titans at this point. So are you necessarily going to do that? And I'm sure a whole other calculation goes into it at that point. But so they kicked the PAT and then Justin Herbert came out and it was like, okay, oh, we have to move the ball 60 yards in two plays. Yeah, we can do that. So we went and did it, and then they kicked the field goal and won the game. And it's like, yeah, could have done that at any time in this game. But sometimes it's fun to win 17-14.
So going back to the final drive, the Titans' final drive, a couple moments that really stood out. I mean, Okonkwo is turning into a legitimate weapon. I mean,
yes.
he is changing that offense. And even when Traylon, you know, you could see a scenario where Traylon Burks stays healthy mm-hmm. and they finish the back end of that year as a really difficult team to stop. But I mean, he's a missile with the ball in his hands. And sometimes you just don't know. I remember you and I doing the tight end show when we were doing pre-draft, and you know, he looked great. He looked fine, like a fine player, but mm-hmm. sometimes you just, and I've heard coaches say this before, until you get him on a practice field and you watch him hit another one of your guys, you have no idea how the physics are actually going to work. And yeah. he's one of those people that's just a human missile, and it's crazy. So that's one thing to take into account. Another was I loved the fact that Ryan Tannehill, not loved, I mean, you have to respect the fact that Ryan Tannehill came back into this game from an injury, and you have Derrick Henry, and time's running out, and he's like, nah, I'm just going to smash my body into the goal line for the game-tying touchdown.
Yeah.
Especially when everyone was out of gas on that drive. Like, they were just, they were feeding Henry, and they were running back to the ball, so he was probably exhausted. You know, all that stuff, I think you kind of pick up on and you notice. But good on the Chargers, man. This was... This is a game that if they lost, I think they get into a full tailspin chaos mode. And now you get a two-game pad above 500. And I think it was the second down before Ryan Tannehill scored on third down, stuffed Derrick Henry in a big spot on the goal line when everybody knows how crappy your run defense is. I thought that was a pretty big moment for them.
Yeah. I mean, look, the game, I think, maybe is a little bit dicier for this Chargers defense if Tannehill has his full mobility and all that, but you know, I don't know, another nice defensive performance here for the much maligned and probably accurately maligned Chargers defense.
Lions Jets.
So we'll get into the timeout thing. I don't know if there's a whole lot to discuss other than that it was, you know, it was a mistake in the end. My two kind of takeaways from this game, Zach Wilson looked more calm. In control is probably overstating it. The accuracy is not quite there. He looked, he's missing throws he shouldn't miss. But he was playing within structure for the most part. And then when they had to sort of, you know, do the scramble thing and do the out-of-structure stuff and the hurry-up, it kind of fits him a little bit better.
Yeah, I think I forget, Gary, what quarterback we were talking about this with earlier in the season, but it's almost like when you eliminate the ability to think about stuff, you know, I think that some players end up playing a little bit better. And obviously you can't play with tempo forever. Unless you have a very special kind of offense, but you can't play tempo forever specifically with this kind of scheme. But I mean, gosh, the first drive of the second quarter, he looked unstoppable. And he unlocked a foot pop, Gary, for the CJ Uzoma touchdown. That was pretty. And all of a sudden, if you're the Jets, you're like, okay, yeah, this is kind of what we planned on. This is what it's supposed to look like.
It was a necessary foot pop. I think that's the important distinction.
It was a necessary foot pop. Yes.
It was because he'd broken out a couple this year and just like, oh, no, you didn't have to do that. You could have just thrown it to that guy 4 yards upfield and he would have turned around and run for another 20 instead of firing that thing out of bounds. So I think a positive step. And again, when we look back, I don't know how many more starts he'll get. I don't know how this is going to wrap up. I don't know what's going to happen this offseason. But I think we might end up deciding it's something of an overreaction to two bad games against a Bill Belichick defense that has made all the Jets quarterbacks look really bad for a really long time. The other thing, and this is, you know, Ben Johnson, who is just sort of steadily and quietly and stealthily moving into head coaching conversations. Just a really cool play design on the short yardage play that ended up being the game-winning touchdown. And yeah, it's not a play that is going to, you know, net you 45 yards, but it's play action, and it's play action at midfield, and you can actually, sort of play with the depth of the drop. The quarterback has some options outside of just, you know, rolling to one side and hoping that one of your options have come open. So it was, I believe, Brock Wright was the tight end on that, on the right side of the formation. They did the play action, and I think as soon as the play action happened, the Jets were ready for it, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is on the right side of the formation, and they had him covered. And at that point, you're like, oh, man, the Jets got him. It's not going to work. But then Brock Wright had snuck out to the left side of the formation and was wide open and caught the pass. And obviously the rest of the run is not what you draw up, but it's nice to get. But they had the first down regardless.
Yeah. I this was a cool game, I think, for the – I think it's an important game for the Lions as they get into 500 because they're winning in different ways now, right? It's not just a boat race and then the other team mm-hmm. runs out of gas. These are kind of these slog it out sort of games, and they are – and listen, the Jets, through four quarters, I've never seen more theatrical, unbelievable kind of like quarterback padding catches. Like Garrett Wilson had one. Michael mm-hmm. Carter had one on a tipped ball that was destined to be a pick six. Like I think Zach Wilson got hit and he like ran halfway across the field and jumped in the air and like took it out of a defender's hands. Like Zach was getting these things play after play after play. And if you're the Lions, those are super frustrating. Those are super frustrating times, but to be able to stay with it and to win a game like that, I think is really big.
And you had said for like 2 months now, you were just sort of hitting on like, the Jets are really good. And I admit, I was just kind of smiling and nodding politely. The Jets are really good. They're actually so good. Again, there's that top six in the league right now, and they're not in there. But they are absolutely on that next tier of just, it's just a good team. And if you found a really good quarterback, then it's really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, shoot. It's, I don't know, man. They're a field goal away here from this one. I actually have the end of the thing up. I don't know. They are a split second away from tying this game. And we're talking about, you know, there's a way that you can crane your neck and say, this was an excellent Zach Wilson start. He looked as I do think he looked as confident as I've seen him mm-hmm. in the backfield. And hey, you're on the up and up. But I mean, I think this team, you know, you always say next year, next year, next year. You know, but I do think the future is very bright here. This is a very, very solid young roster.
And I would be curious. Again, we'll touch on the timeouts real quick. The Jets end the game with a timeout in their pocket, which is obviously not good when you have to attempt a long field goal on a first down. But I was kind of thinking, are they not using these timeouts because they want the hurry up going here? They don't want to take the foot off their gas. They want Zach Wilson to sort of thrive in this environment that he's kind of comfortable in, and they don't want the Lions to be able to get a breather at that point. Looking back, they probably should have used one on the first down that maybe or maybe was not a first down to Garrett Wilson. And then I thought they should have used one after the opening play sack, because I always think if you have three in your pocket, just use one there because everyone's got to run back. Now you're looking at second and 19, and you just got to figure something else out.
Yeah, I think what Salah said, right? He said, I could always, in hindsight, call a timeout there to settle the guys down. And I think that was kind of the one sort of inch of give that he was providing there. But
It's a game management error. And just like we talked about with Trevor Lawrence, the things that he can correct – game management errors are the easiest things for a head coach to correct going forward. Andy Reid used to be the worst in the world, and now he's winning Super Bowls.
I would never in my life want that that responsibility as a head coach. I would defer everything to my game management coach. I would not want anybody like I would never, you know what I mean? It's just I don't know what I would be responsible for if I was a head coach at that point, but just like throwing the challenge flag and looking mean on the sidelines. That's kind of your job at that point, you know?
Yeah, you need a guy. So there should be a guy who's in charge of game management, you know, clock stuff, timeouts, and challenge flags. And he looks, you know, he's not Robert Saleh, but he's someone with that like Robert Saleh vibe of just being like a huge sort of, you know, I don't know, Marvel Cinematic Universe looking guy. And then you just have an earpiece where you just have some nerd from MIT telling them what to do. But the guy doing it, everyone can accept.
Yeah.
Giants, Commanders.
So, yeah, Sunday Night Football. It was not beautiful football, but it was a it was a good one. It was two game teams. And this Giants team kind of won in the way that the Commanders always try and win. They did it with the... you know, sort of low-risk offense, and defense that played really well, and the Commanders just kind of kept abandoning the plan to ram it down the throats of the run game.
Yeah. I'm still... So, we're taping this not long after the completion of that game, as a little bit of a peek behind the curtain to those who are listening, and I'm still a little hot about the officiating, Gary. I don't know. Where do you land on this? Is this just Twitter spurt of the moment stuff, or
is this
really poorly officiated?
There is one that I'm hot about. There's one that I think people are hot about, but I am not hot about.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think you're hot about the illegal formation call, and I think you're not hot about the pass interference.
Yeah, because the pass interference is, it's not a Hail Mary, it's not a 50-yard pass, but it's a broken play. It's over, you got beat, you got out-schemed, and now you're just chucking it up, and yeah, it's a pass interference probably, but you didn't earn it. Like, you know, you blew it. The play didn't work, time to go home. The illegal formation thing gets me because, again, they show the replay on TV, and it's what everyone is obviously... latching onto here. McLaurin did what you're supposed to do. And yes, he is probably, you know, close to a full yard off the line of scrimmage, but he is communicating with the side judge, who is supposed to be telling him, no, you're not good, or you're good. I mean, I suppose the side judge could have been like, you know, move up as the ball is being snapped or something like that, but it looked like he checked twice.
Right. It's like, what else do you want the guy to do there? And it almost seemed like, see, this is where, this is the Zapruder stuff that gets fans completely on the side of the fact that, which I used to love to argue with former host Andy Benoit, that the NFL is fixed, which it's not. but it used to really get a rise out of Andy, and I really enjoyed it. And I had this whole conspiracy involving the Mannings, and it was really spectacular. I was an interior offensive lineman, so I never had to worry about being on sides, even in my very limited football experience, but on the field. But yeah, I mean, that's what you do. You say, hey, am I good? And it seemed like he kept asking, and the official was just like, I don't know. That's not fair.
That's the only thing you would argue. We don't know exactly what the communication was. Maybe the official was like, no, you're not good. You're not good. Move up. And he keeps on looking at him, like, scooting up 1 inch, like, now am I good? Like, no, move up. That could have been the exchange. We don't know for sure. But I don't mind the rule. I don't mind the call if, player is not sort of checking with the line. But it's also just one of those rules where it's like, yeah, he's checking with the linesman. He clearly intends to be lined up on the line of scrimmage. And I think we need to sort of... put the flag in our pockets at that point. All that said, the Commanders still would have had to get the 2-point conversion, and then the Giants had about a minute left and at least one timeout. I don't know if it was one or two at that point to potentially go get a Graham Gano field goal, and Graham Gano does not miss. So,
this is definitely way, way, way far down on the most problematic list of things that Chris Collinsworth has said. But I do enjoy when he gets himself, and I've noticed this a lot, actually. And I'm sure it's sort of the, occupational hazard. But I like when he gets over-incredulous about something, and then on the replay, it shows that what he is saying is spectacular is nowhere near spectacular. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. I do.
Like, sometimes it's like, oh, man, 74 crushed them on the block. But then, like, they show the replay, and it's just like an offensive lineman, like, tumbling forward, and he doesn't even touch the guy. And in the middle of, like, a couple nice plays for Saquon Barkley, he's like, run this back. He's like, watch Saquon Barkley catch this ball. And then he goes, and then it's just it's a 4-yard reception. Like, there's nothing to it. And then he just has to fill the time. And he goes, the way that he catches this ball, puts one hand over the other and brings it in. It's like, yeah, that's how you catch it. You know,
it's the Collinsworth cadence, though. I think that's why he gets away with it. does. You just, it doesn't matter what words are coming out, just if you have that inflection that he does in such a Collinsworth way.
Puts one hand in over the other. I was just like, I mean, it was a check down. And so Saquon Barkley received the ball, turned around, and fell forward. Yeah, it was, you know, it was something. So that was cool. But I don't know. I think this is good for the Giants, man. And it was funny because on that last drive, the Commanders started banging them on out routes, just like the Giants lost or tied the game the last time they played the Commanders, right? It was almost the same deal, but then they were able to tighten up and play. You know, everyone, like you said, is going to be jumping on the pass interference bandwagon. I think an official in the back of the end zone there has a better feel for not the look of the movement, but the effect of the movement, if that makes any sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, hands draped over the back should theoretically trigger a call. And if you're an official, you normally don't want to do that because, you know, you think you're going to get in a lot of trouble. But I have no problem not throwing that flag.
Yeah, me neither. This was, I think, for a lot of people, the first time they got a good look at Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yes.
Or at least Kayvon Thibodeau looked really, really good as people got a look at him. Again, we don't need to relitigate the top of the draft and all that stuff, but... gosh, the discussion around him, the two things were, motor. Does he have the motor that you need? There were a couple plays where he's just everywhere all the time. He's coming at angles that you just don't expect a front seven player to come at. And the other thing was the whole thing with like the ankle flexion and all that. And it's like, yeah, he had an ankle injury. He was playing on a very injured ankle for all of last season. And everyone's knocking him for, like, that ankle's not very flexible. And then on top of that, like, he's just not working that hard to get Oregon to the, GoDaddy.org bowl or whatever. And the other option for him in that situation, like, if you are in that situation, your two options are, I'm going to keep playing, and now I have all these... all these guys knocking me for perceived short. Boy, that guy with the torn labrum, he just doesn't have the arm talent to play in this league. Or you say, you know what? This is going to do me no good, and our season is going nowhere. We're not going to win the national championship. I'm just going to sit out. And then you become the guy who quit on your team. So
right.
This is the result of... this is what healthy Kayvon Thibodeau looks like. He had, obviously, the biggest play of the game was the strip sack touchdown that he had. And he was just all over the place. And he's wrecking tight ends. And he's going to be a very good player for a very long time.
My favorite thing is when you... are about to list an obscure college bowl game that you've made up, and I love seeing the wheels turning, and then you never disappoint. They always make me laugh, like 10 times out of 10. They're very funny.
I need to make a list, but I feel like it would just come off as so unorganic that maybe I shouldn't.
Eagles, Bears.
So this game and the next game we'll talk about, I kind of like lumping together because, again, we go through the schedules at this time of year and just sort of, you know, certain games get a green check mark, certain games get a red X, and we kind of, you know, expect that that's how life is going to be. But especially if you go to Soldier Field this time of year where, you know, it's a slow track, it's a weird environment, and it's Justin Fields on the other side, you kind of might get punched a little bit harder than you were expecting.
And this was the... Justin Fields was fantastic in the first couple drives. You know, that the one run where he stepped out of bounds and he should have had the touchdown was just ridiculous. And mm-hmm. I think... And Montgomery, I don't know what has happened. Maybe the Bears have him in more space, but is... just such a more violent and physical runner than I think I've ever seen him be before this season. And late in the year, that's a really difficult thing to have to contend with consistently, no matter how much you've upgraded your run defense.
But this was a nice win for the Eagles because it's a win, first of all. And they are obviously very much in control of that road to the number one seed in the NFC. But this is, you know, they played probably a B-minus game. sloppy tackling and you know, the offense wasn't quite clicking, but when they needed to flip the switch late in the game, they did. And man, A.J. Brown stacking defensive backs is just, he's just stupidly good.
Yeah. Can you imagine if the Titans held on to him and then drafted Treylon Burks anyway?
That would be awesome.
Well, they couldn't have, right? Yes. I mean, he wouldn't have been available. But you know, in the world that I've just created, that would have been super special. Couple picks, though. I mean, again, the Bears are going to finish with like 4 wins or 5 wins this year, but I can't remember. I said this last week. I can't remember a more positive 4 or 5 win season in recent NFL history. And Eberflus's defense got after it a little bit today, picked off Jalen, and you know, I think frustrated them a little bit too.
Chiefs, Texans.
And similarly for the Chiefs, they go down to Houston. They miss a couple kicks. They have 2 non-quarterback turnovers, and all of a sudden they're in a dogfight here with the Texans.
You know what? You got to give Houston credit, and I guess we should stop being surprised because they're all NFL games, and these players, it's not like you collectively just decide to give up like it's a little league team. You all have incentives, and you have to play well, and you want to play next year, and so you have to put good things on film. But the Texans always amaze me, and it's been the last 2 years of just their organization's been a complete just nuclear wasteland, and for some reason they've been plucky through it all, you know, and they've taken the Cowboys to deep last week. They took the Chiefs deep this week. I give them a lot of credit.
I want to make a point about both teams in this one. Start with the Texans. Look, I said last week, it was the Monday show, maybe it was the midweek, but I don't know why we would have talked about the Texans in the midweek, so it was probably the Monday show. I called Jeff Driscoll Diet Taysom Hill, which... It's so insulting to Taysom Hill because, Jeff Driscoll is fine. If you want to have him on the roster and be like, well, here's a guy you can do so, you know, he's sort of a, it's almost like carrying Tebow on your roster, but you can, you know, you don't have like all the stuff that comes along with it. The fact that they keep on putting him out there, and again, this is a team that put Kyle Allen, again, fine career for Kyle Allen, not an NFL quarterback at this point in his career. Like, you shouldn't be putting him on the field. I counted 7 Driscoll snaps, 12 yards gained. But the one that summed it up best, and one of them was like a 3rd and 1 from midfield. And it's like, oh, be really nice to have this. And yeah, you're going to run a little sweet with Jeff Driscoll, who's going to come up a full yard short. There was a tight red zone first down play, and they called a little, you know, bootleg play action, and Driscoll rolls out, and he just sort of slowly jogged out of bounds for a 3-yard loss. And it was like, what is this? What are you guys doing there? And Davis Mills comes in the next play and, like, throws a dart to Jordan Akins, and they get a touchdown. Davis Mills is not, like, oh, this guy's a franchise quarterback. Like, I understand. You don't have to be excited about him. But can we please recognize he's so much better than every other quarterback on your roster? So just play him. He's going to be, at worst, and really in the most likely scenario, a really cheap number 2 quarterback for the next 2 seasons. And that's a perfectly fine thing, and live with that. But I just don't get why they keep on doing this experimentation with quarterbacks who can't play on this team.
I mean, Lovie Smith, I'm not saying he's on his... I mean, I don't know for certain that he's on his way out. I would know which way I was betting if I had to put money on it. But, you know, maybe you're just like, yeah, whatever, dude. You know, you and Pep Hamilton have a meeting and you're just like, hey, man, do whatever you want. I don't care. I'm done. I'm finished. And, you know, have fun with it. And I think that's what they're doing, Gary. I think they're just having fun. I love the visual of you menacingly tallying up Jeff Driscoll snaps, though.
It was awful.
Late December.
He had like 2 positive plays to start the game, and then they're like, ooh, let's keep on going back to this well. And it's like, it's a feeble sweep play, or it's a wide receiver screen every time, and it doesn't work. And I just don't get it. The other thing I want to mention, this is just an interesting thing to sort of note on the Chiefs. I think we knew this was going to come, but, you know, Andy Reid seems to really like the idea of Isaiah Pacheco as the sort of violent, wear you down runner that he's going to roll out in December, January, and hopefully for them February. He's really mistake prone, especially in pack. You know, he missed a block in pass protection that led to a sack. He also lost a fumble in this one. It's just kind of interesting to think, because how many snaps did like Darrell Williams play on really good Chiefs offenses? And it was just kind of like, you want your running backs to do no harm. Just don't mess anything up. Block the guys, run for 4 yards and don't fumble, and Patrick Mahomes will do everything else. They're looking for something more, and they're just sort of working through some growing pains. And obviously they have some, you know, they have some margin for error here when they go down to Houston, but Pacheco is a violent runner. He's just a really mistake-prone young player right now, and they seem to be sort of sprinting to get him ready for a bigger role in the postseason. And maybe they get there, maybe they don't.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's weird, because with Patrick Mahomes, it feels like all you need is Jerick McKinnon, because you just need someone that even poses some sort of a mild to moderate threat of taking a check down. And like, the Chiefs don't, yes, everyone needs a running game. A running game would be nice for anybody, but they're the one team in the NFL that they could pass the ball on every down and they would be just as effective as they would be running the ball. That's just how their offense, their quarterback, everything's set up. That said, I don't blame them for sacrificing a couple games to win ugly and hoping that you're going to be able to have this sort of counterpunch ready for the postseason. Because if it works, I mean, good luck. I mean, I would FedEx one day ship that team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, they briefly benched him. We had a Ronald Jones appearance after Pacheco lost the fumble, and he had already blown the blitz pickup, and it was kind of like, oh boy, they're in the game, and they're going to move him to the bench. And no, he was back in the second half. So,
Colts Vikings.
All right, we are going to do three quick express stops on the Jimmy train with the Saturday games. Colts, do you want to start with the positive side of this? You can talk about the Vikings, and then I'll start yelling at people about the Colts.
Yeah, if you want to dress down Jeff Saturday, that's fine. I say go for it. Here's what I'll say is the positive. So I went into this game, and I think a lot of us did at halftime, ready to just write a pretty easy column and then go off to our dinner on Saturday. But I think this was the easy narrative here, was that this was the indictment of the Vikings being the Vikings throughout the season. This was the embodiment of all of our collective complaints about the Vikings, right? They weren't good enough, that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I still think, so I think a lot of things can be true at the end of this game. I think that what we said about the Vikings can still 100% be true. I think Kevin O'Connell could have made a difference from an emotional standpoint and an offensive schematic standpoint. And I think that they could be a slightly better team. I think that's true. And I also think that a game like this can change a team's emotional DNA. Sure, it could wear them out, and that's always a possibility. It could be the Johan Santana no-hitter kind of deal for the Vikings. But this could also, I think, erase some of the collective doubt in their own minds. Like, I think this is one of those games, and you hate to get sort of meta with the whole thing, but this is one of those games where you win this and you stop believing what everybody else believes about you. Like, you have just completed the greatest comeback in NFL history. And yes, it was against Jeff Saturday, who is a puppet of a coach, but it's still a professional football team. You are still throwing against Stephen Gilmore. You know, you're still playing against Gus Bradley, Matt Ryan, and you did it. And, you know, can't take that away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, the Colts side of this, and we talked about it early, and then I think we both kind of backed off because it was like, you know, are we really going to see a full meltdown? It's still an NFL team. And then they beat the Raiders. And it's like, okay, well, whatever. They go 2-4 down the stretch. No one's really going to have a big take on the Colts. But I mean, this was the moment. This is why you don't hire the guy off TV to come be your head coach, because something humiliating might happen. And now if you're Jim Irsay, you don't really have the option to hire Jeff Saturday as your full-time coach. If you do, I mean, who's going there? You're going to be picking all the guys who just don't have choices to go elsewhere. But the other thing is, There are a lot of coaches on that staff who have to wear this loss now. You were part of the worst blown lead in NFL history, and that happened. And, I mean, Bubba Ventrone is like the one guy who's going to survive this because his special teams had a great day on Saturday, regardless of everything else. But this is why you don't do it. This is bad tape. This is a horrifying moment for every coach, and this is something that's going to follow people.
Do you think anybody else but Jeff Saturday shuts that down? I'm not playing devil's advocate. Trust me. I'm not trying to Tucker Carlson you here. Like there's no trick. This is a genuine ask, because do you want to hear something cool about this?
Yeah.
Okay. I went back and I rewatched it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Before I wrote about it. But the first time through, I listened to it on the radio.
Okay.
The whole thing. Like the whole thing.
You listened to the entire game on the radio?
Yeah, I was at my parents' house, and I could not. They don't have NFL Network.
Mm-hmm.
I have NFL Plus. The broadcast wasn't working. Every illegal stream that I tried ended up just mucking up my computer with all sorts of strange viruses and ads. And so I listened to it on the radio, and it was delightful. And I followed it on Gamecast. And then I went back, and then I found a version of it afterwards, and while mm-hmm. I was writing about it, I rewatched the game. But it was neat. It was neat to listen to it on the radio. It's very cool.
I do believe a professional football coach avoids this. I mean, I can say that because there's no way of disproving that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's become just sort of a tainted franchise at this point, which is incredible considering where they were 11 and a half months ago.
I agree with your premise that there is a zero. This game disallowed Jim Irsay from hiring Jeff Saturday. And if he somehow tries to do that, to make this a full-time gig, I mean, that would be... I don't know. It would be franchise altering, right? It would be you would have to imagine that most of the coaching staff would leave. You'd have to restaff it.
Mm-hmm.
And who's taking that job? I don't know. I guess Matt Ryan's your quarterback next year? So far?
No, I don't think so.
It was a 2-year deal.
I think anyone. Oh, they can get out of that, can't they?
I know they can get out of it, but I mean,
I don't think.
What are you going to do? You're going to go Jimmy Garoppolo? You're going to go?
Yeah, chop that list. We'll put out the list. You'll probably have to write out the list at some point.
I probably will have to make that list.
That we ran down. We did the would you or won't you list. Go get Jacoby Brissett back.
Ooh.
I mean, do the thing you should have done in the first place.
That's right. Can we talk about some moments from this game, though?
Sure.
The Justin Jefferson touchdown on Stephon Gilmore was just beautiful. The one where that got him to within 36-21, where it was just the ISO route,
mm-hmm.
where it was just the two of those guys. That was one of the prettiest routes I've ever seen. It was just spectacular.
Yep.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was Kirk Cousins tripping on the snap, and he just fell backwards like a dead person.
Yep.
Oh, that made me laugh.
His aesthetics are not always great, but he's got a ton of fourth quarter comebacks over the last 2 years here, and this was obviously a biggest one ever.
Ravens Browns.
I don't have a ton on this game. I think the Tyler Huntley thing, which was cool, is kind of done. I think everyone's sort of ready for him to come around this year, and I think he's going to be a number two quarterback in the league for a long time, but it's just not going to be what it was a year ago where he was keeping teams in games. But this Ravens team is they're probably going to make the playoffs. I think they've stacked enough wins, but they're kind of just, you know, teetering at this point. And the Browns are, you know, the defense is playing better. You would hope they would be ready for Tyler Huntley this time around, and they were.
They were, and it's a weird, it's weird because it's almost like when Deshaun came back, they kind of operated as like, okay, it's almost like when your kid starts playing AAU and then you set the team up against all these kind of really favorable matchups. And, you know, I'm not saying the Texans and the Bengals and the Ravens are all very favorable matchups, but they are winning games for Deshaun, right? Like, he is not winning any of these games or really largely contributing to any of these wins. And so it's a weird thing where how do you kind of wear that record, you know? But the defense certainly has been playing better. And, I mean, my goodness, they stopped Patrick Ricard on a 4th-and-1. So you got to give him credit for that. That is a he's just a refrigerator of a human being. Did you see that stop? You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. It was really good.
I mean, he's so big. It looks like you're just handing Kevin Nash the football from WCW, you know?
Dolphins, Bills.
I don't know what Kevin Nash is, by the way.
You know Kevin Nash, from the Wolfpack, WCW, the professional wrestler, he's a big guy.
I mean, I recognize all the words you said, but I just can't identify any of them in context right now.
Fair enough.
I'm guessing he's big, though.
He's like 7 feet tall.
Okay.
He's like a 7 foot tall Hulk Hogan.
Oh, all right. I'll get behind that. So Saturday night game, not as much snow as we thought. I'm not gonna. The Bills are a level above the Dolphins. The Dolphins hung in. It's a game where they got the strip sack. They got the essentially a turnover with the roughing the punter. You want to win that game. And they didn't. The interesting things in this game to me was the tweaks the Dolphins made on offense. A lot more under center for Tua, which I think seemed to make everyone else more comfortable in executing this run game, which we saw take off. And frankly, the way that teams are defending them right now, this is a big part of how they're going to counterpunch, as we said in the midweek show. They're going to have to get this run game going. Big game for Raheem Mostert. Other than that, look, these outbreaking routes are still an adventure with Tua Tagovailoa. There could have been at least 2 pick sixes in this one that he kind of got away with. We'll see. They're working through it on the fly. It was a positive development, I guess, sort of a step in the right direction, but it just seems unlikely it's going to be anywhere near where it was in October, November.
Yeah, and to your point, you made a brilliant point last week about the backfield motion stuff. I felt like they almost like shortened the distance for a lot of Tyreek Hill's backfield motions, or they didn't do a bunch of what they had done before. Like, there wasn't the sweeping kind of end-to-end stuff, like as much of it as we've seen in the past. And I don't know if that had something to do with the way that they were setting up the running game, but it was good. It was just a very good, thorough, sober analysis of the Dolphins, which you've been doing all season, Gary. And I think it's the right time. It's the right time, as is every time, to listen to Gary.
Yeah.
Can I make one random point about the NFL Network games?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They have the worst lower third graphic of any, like the numbers and the fonts and everything are just really bad. They're just bad.
Okay.
And so I had to make that known. It's just not an aesthetically pleasing, like when you turn on the TV, you're just like, ew, I don't like that.
I'll take a closer look next week. It didn't jump out to me one way or another.
Take a closer look, and then the only other thing I'll mention is don't throw snowballs at people during games.
Yeah.
So I was at a Notre Dame Syracuse game. I took the train there from Syracuse when I was in college.
Okay.
And it was during a snow, like it was during like a blizzard. And the night before, I think the Notre Dame women's team went to the next round of the playoffs, and we were like running, we like stormed the field and we were doing like snow angels and stuff. It was very cool. Then the next day, everyone was throwing snowballs at the football players during the game. And Notre Dame had like this very old stoic stadium announcer, and he came on the press box like a dad, and he was just like, "Knock it off down there."
For shame.
It was really funny. It was just like, it was what your dad would say, be like, "Knock it off." He's like, "All you kids, stop it." And it made me think of that during the, because Mike McDaniel brought that up. He's like, "Yeah, it's not cool when people are getting hit with ice balls. So yeah, you should probably stop doing that."
Bengals, Buccaneers.
All right, four games to go in the lightning-ish round. Look, the Bengals just keep on cruising here. Dicey first half, but they take over in the second half. Look, Tony Romo is a nice Midwestern fella and an optimist, and I think he was really trying to find some ray of hope with this Buccaneers offense. As the game was wrapping up, he was kind of like, I think we saw some positive steps forward. I think it can be saved. I would gently disagree while recognizing that he knows a lot more about football than I do. I think this was the game where they rolled out on the new stuff and it worked for a half. And then the Bengals are like, "Oh, okay, so this is your new stuff." And then it was done. And then they turned the ball over a lot. And I talk all the time about sort of the flukiness of turnovers and how it, but they had no hope of moving the ball in the second half of this game. So it was just sort of, it was like cutting out the middleman between having to punt it on another three and out. It's just turning it over, and that's how their offense functioned. It was more play action, a little more motion, and I think it caught the Bengals off guard, and then it didn't, and then it was over.
This is not true. I mean, Tom Brady knows more about football than probably any living, breathing human at this point, but I just like the idea of I don't know if you saw the report where Tom Brady essentially has like a closed door Saturday meeting now without Byron Leftwich or any of the coaches in there, in which he gets to like change the game plan, which is very funny. But I like the idea that, he's 46 now, the idea of him just going in there and starting to, like any 46-year-old, just starting to say crazy things that don't make sense anymore, and him just being like, we're going to do this. And everyone's like, "Oh, God, what's happening here?" And I doubt that that's happened. But, it's just one of those, like, we're all like, "Where is Tom Brady going to play next year?" But all the players in the Bucs are like, "He's just making stuff up, man. This is totally crazy."
Falcons, Saints.
Oh, so the NFC South really eating each other of late here. The Saints end up knocking off the Falcons. This was Desmond Ritter's first start. He looked like a guy making his first start. I thought he was, the ball placement wasn't great. I thought he looked a little bit slow processing. He looked like a rookie quarterback who wasn't quite ready for this.
I feel like the Saints and the Falcons play every week in a game that I just don't want to watch, right? Yeah. It's just every week I look at the schedule and I'm like, "Oh my God, it's Falcons Saints again. How did that possibly happen?"
Yeah.
I don't, not a whole lot. I mean, there was a Taysom Hill touchdown of all things. And yeah, I mean,
he was upset about that diet Taysom Hill comment about
Clearly motivated. Yeah, clearly motivated. But I don't know. I guess positives. Drake London got the ball seven times. Like, you're getting Desmond Ridder is getting the ball to your number one wide receiver, which is, when we look at Zach Wilson and Garrett Wilson, not a given, not a thing that can happen all the time just because you hope it will. So I don't know. You could say that there's some hope moving forward. I don't know. Do you have do you have any sort of Ritter take on after week one or?
No. If you're taking the course pass fail, I don't think he failed. But, if you're getting traditional grades, you got you just avoided the F+. You got like a D. And that's where you are right now. And you're in a division. This division, Bucks 6-8 and everyone else 5-9 right now. So, someone's going to be hosting the Cowboys in January.
He did that thing where, it was on his first third down, I think, where he dropped back and then he just stepped up in the pocket like he had never seen a pocket before and just ran straight into one of his guys, which is, kind of telling about how the rest of the game is going to go. But I don't know. Colts should sign Taysom Hill, Gary. How about that? Let's walk off on that one.
Yeah.
Steelers, Panthers.
Boy, number 2 overall pick Mitchell Trubisky versus number 3 overall pick Sam Darnold in a game where both defenses just absolutely dared the other team to throw the ball as much as humanly possible. Both quarterbacks were fine. Trubisky bounced back from a really shaky outing off the bench last week, which was, you know, good for him. And the Steelers end up winning this one, and the Panthers still control their own destiny in the end, I think. I guess I don't know that for sure now.
I like the idea. So the NFL after every game, and it's good. It helps just refresh before the podcast is over. They'll post, you know, the top plays, but it tells the story of a game. Most of them are like 15 minutes long. And so you can get a real feel for the game, or you can remind yourself of all the things that had happened before, you know, we tape the podcast, because a lot of stuff happens during the day. You're writing, you're working. The top plays from this game were 4 minutes long. Like, and by comparison, the NFL once had a 45-minute top play from just the overtime of Chiefs-Bills in the playoffs. They found, man, 4 minutes worth of highlight-worthy clips from this game, which is quite enjoyable.
Cardinals-Broncos.
So I will admit it, if you won't, but I made it a point not to watch a single second of this game. it's not entirely, because at one point I was like, I got to check in to see what's going on. And I saw Trace McSorley was in the game for the Cardinals, and I was like, nope, we're not gonna watch this one. I don't know. The good thing for the Broncos is if you're George Payton, I mean, you are desperate to get some wins here and just, you know, not end up giving up like the number 2 pick of the draft in that Russell Wilson deal.
Yeah, my God. But hey, Brett Rippon, you know, he wasn't tripping.
Yeah.
Good game from Brett Rippon today. Always dripping Brett Rippon.
Yeah. Lots, you know, of rhymes here.
Yeah. I don't know. This is what you expected, right? They were, you know, Broncos are going to play really good defense. They're going to make it tough on Colt McCoy. The Cardinals franchise is in ruin at this point. You know, there's some serious life stuff, I think, going on there. This is this is not funny bad. This is like the Seventh Heaven episode where they start talking about dangerous stuff and they tease it all week on the CW. You know, this is I think it's that kind of stuff that's going on there. So they played like it. It's a team that's falling apart.
Before we go, we do have our Simpsons clip of the week to play for y'all. Go ahead, Shelby.
I am not an easy man to work for. While directing Hats Off to Chanukah, I reduced more than one cast member to tears. Did I expect too much from fourth graders? The review, play enjoyed by all, speaks for itself.
That is, of course, John Lovitz. Very underrated as a voice actor.
Yeah.
As Llewellyn Sinclair when he's preparing to direct O Streetcar. Just a really good moment. And, of course, we are taping on the first night of Hanukkah, so all you folks who celebrate, enjoy it. And... yeah, we're going to be back the day after Christmas because they're playing games on Christmas this year.
Ugh.
All of them.
Jeepers.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary, while supplies last. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.